Accession number 30260, Reel 8.
Ah, yes. We went then into the syllabes. And that was noted mainly to see if those people in the syllabes, because we found that the Christian community on Ambon was so strong, there were so many native Christians, that they were cooperated with the Allies, especially with the Dutch. But information that we received from the Dutch about the syllabes was very sparse. And I think that made them think we better look ourselves and see what is, because they not always were truthful in their reports of what was occurring. For example, the Dutch never admitted that they were hated in Indonesia. They never did. And they didn't care. They kept on saying, oh, just walk up to natives, say you're a Dutchman and you'll be right. What was absolutely false. But they never, never, never wanted to admit. Even at the end of the war, when it was all up, they said, oh, it was badly handled by the Allies. And that's why we could get back. And they fostered that feeling, but it wasn't the population. Where every time they came, they were rather shot at, and so, you know, that was in 47. So it was not true. So they weren't sure. So I was asked with the group to go into the syllabes and see what my impression was of the natives there. And again, how was the occupation? Was it, were there a lot of Japanese troops there? How were they getting on with the native population? And we found in the syllabes the same as in Sumatra, and that this, they were working for the Japanese, not because they wanted to, because they had to. An intense hatred still of the Dutch, and that is what the Dutch didn't want us to know, so they didn't want us on the syllabus. And the same situation where there was this feeling of, you know, we can't do anything about the Japanese, but we must make sure that the Dutch don't get back here. But those reports, when we went, were always denied by the Dutch and embraced by the Australians.
Well, we can talk about that later on, because you're mentioning to me that you would get into a slightly more political angle of this particular job. But my impression, and it's only an ignorant one coming from someone who's never been in a war type situation, is that if you were careful, if you were quiet, and if you moved around at the right time of the day, these jobs weren't particularly dangerous so far.
No, but you needed a lot of luck. I really feel that the success of that I had was 75% because of luck and 25% of knowledge.
Well, people say it's all to do with luck, chance.
Chance and luck.
You're
You land. You could be absolutely deserted. You can get organized and meet somebody and get into the hills where they won't observe you, set up there so that daytime you were covered. You could land and cover and find yourself in the middle of a group of Japanese or so, and you'd be gone. The Japanese did use these little landmines in the jungle tracks, because they had Capitae, that is their Gestapo, had found out that people were landing there. So they couldn't stop them. They didn't have enough troops for that. But they did have little landmines that they put on those roads, in the hope that we would blow ourselves up and did enough damage that we had finished. And that was one of the greatest dangers we had, is those little landmines. It wouldn't kill you, but it would blow your legs off or something like that. And then you had to kill yourself. So that was the main danger. And that's why if you went with a group, so even with three people like we did, you have one walking a little bit in the front and two in the back. And if you expected to walk for about 2 hours, then you would say 30 minutes, the front one walks, then he goes to the back and the next one run, and you do that.
you taught to sort of see the signs of, mines having been laid, or...
Can't see these things. The jungle is very overgrown. Some parts, we try to avoid the tracks in the end. What means you had to really literally cut your way through the thick undergrowth that was very thick in Indonesia. And that's why a klewang or a good sword that was very sharp was so necessary. You literally had to cut your way out. It was a lot slower and you get more cuts and things, but it was a lot safer than trying to follow those paths.
I'd like to talk about an experience where you were walking down a path and one of the people in front were blown up, but we can maybe leave that for later on. In relation to your experience in these foreign lands where you obviously aren't in control of the situation and you are relying on luck and chance, and what sort of experience did you have with Kempitai, for instance, or people working against you?
Well, you excuse me. You hope, of course, that they don't see you or don't know. But you know that they have certain plans made to capture you. So you have to, again, be very, very careful. And I found the best way, you need a lot of patience. Better to walk 2 kilometers a whole night. When you look back, you say, well, I haven't done nothing. It's just been walking around here. Then trying to force it or try to get closer to it and get captured or getting found out that you were there. So patience, patience, patience. And try all the time look upon it at the worst situation. So if you make a decision, is what will happen here? Can I go into this village? How many people are still roaming around in the middle of the night? But the Asians were funny like that. In the European, they all go to sleep at 10 o'clock or 11 or 12 o'clock, and it's pretty well deserted. But in those places, in the these natives play gambalang, that is their musical instrument. They play that all night and listening to stories, and they don't go to sleep. So you have to be very careful, where you go, because even at night time, the only good thing is they didn't have electricity, street lights and things, so it was pretty dark, so you can get around. But you had to be very, very careful when you even at night time.
Was there any time that you recall where you did find yourself in a situation where a local suddenly crossed your path?
Several times. And you just have to bluff it out. Being dark paint on you and you wear one of those heads, just hoping that they think you're just one of those that walk around there.
Well, you're a pretty tall bloke. I mean, it would be pretty difficult for you to hide away in a little Indonesian...
It wasn't easy. And then... When that happens, you immediately get away from that spot as quick as possible.
So can you give us an example of one of the occasions when it happened?
Oh, the many times happened that we'd go out about 1 in the morning or 12, and I've had happen that we would walk into a place and there were 3 or 4 natives, and they see you. Well, you just keep walking very quietly, looking around if they're going to follow you. That then you see them talk and keep on looking at you, till you get out of sight. And then you go for the Hades as quick as possible, away from that area, away, and just hope that they don't report you. If they report you, you will soon know, because you see dozens and dozens of soldiers going into that area. So you immediately have to leave even the area in the jungle, way, and go somewhere else. and then as quick as possible moving, even if it means at night, daytime, from that area, because if they report you, you know that they're going to have many, many search parties in that area. But then normally after 1 or 2 days that dies down, they haven't found you. That is why it's very important that you learn exactly not to leave any litter behind or anything that even looks like that people have been, that you've been camping in that area. So that is one of the things you have to learn. And by experience, you learn more and more about that.
Well, presumably, everything you do runs a risk. A footprint here or broken twig there.
That's right.
What? How did you go about making sure? I mean, you've got to live and survive and go to the toilet.
Well,
like
first of
else.
All, for example, if you have to go to the toilet and things like that, you go quite a distance away. And you make sure that it is all buried very well. And try to get the undergrowth, cover it well and truly up from the undergrowth. Well, then you get to the position that for them to find that, they practically have to walk on it or see it because you can't. You see, the undergrowth is so bad there that it's good to help you in that way. You never, of course, leave tins or any. Well, we didn't have tins. I had one tin that I carried, and that was my main meal tin, was my oven. I used that, and I had a bag of rice with me. Put rice in the tin, get some water, boil it, and that put salt in it, and that was my main meal. But that doesn't leave also any things like that. And you always walk very, very careful. So you try to walk all the time, but at night time that is sometimes a bit difficult. So there is where the luck comes in again, you know, hoping that they don't see.
Presumably you're sort of having to chop your way through and make yourself a path.
Yeah, well, somebody comes across that, you're gone, you see. But as I say, I was in many ways you surprised how you can get away with a lot of those things. You know, natives that see it, if they didn't really think that they could get money out of it, they couldn't be bothered. In that way, the Javanese are very philosophical people. They're not great hard workers, and they're not great observers, and they're very much have a policy, gone by, let they go away, I go my way. What was a lot of help to us, in a way. But if they could see money in it, of course, there's a different story.
Was there a time when you possibly stumbled into a group of people and it was a benefit to you?
No, never. It's never been a benefit to us. I have never, never found natives being helpful to us. They've always been hostile, personally. Others might have, I don't know. But I have never found any help whatsoever. The only time that I found a little help was a daytime, and it was the big Waringin tree. That's a very, very tree with this huge root system, the same as you have here in some of the parks. You know those huge trees? They call them a Waringin tree in the it's very thick, and I had made a hampi on top, not high up, but about say 5 meters or so. And it was daytime, and it was all covered, and I was sitting in there, and there was a native village not far away, and there was a native woman coming, and she went to a spot actually to go to the toilet, but I could see it all because I was sitting there. And while she was sitting there, she looked up and she could see me, and she gave me a smile. And I thought, my Joe, will I get out of here and go? But it was in the middle of the day, it was about 11:30. I thought, no, if I go out now, all these people that sit here and just hope. She looked at me, she smiled, she went away, and then that's the end of it. She apparently never reported me. So that's the only friendly thing I've ever come across.
Well, people talk of this luck factor, People also talk of a sort of spiritual aspect to their experience, and they sensed that they were being looked after, or that there was something okay about the situation. Did you ever have anything like that?
I've never felt that sense that I felt okay. I did, or the feeling that I'll be okay. You have to have that. If you don't have that, you go to pieces. You always think that, you know, life is so strong, I'll make it, I'll do all right. But I have found that some of the natives' experiences that they showed, that there was something there that we couldn't explain. I consider it a sense that we have lost because of civilization.
Well, people talk of the sixth sense.
Sixth sense, yeah. That was a very strong in certain parts, that you could see that they did.
People talk, you're mentioning to me off air, so the experiences of telepathy almost.
Oh, mental telepathy was very strong there. You know, they could communicate with other groups of people 40, 50 k's away. And that was definitely true. The native that I had once that came with us, he was in Australia and he came with us. He came from that area and he was evacuated on a ship. He was scared, he got and he finished up in there. And we used him to help us because he was native, he could go out. But he had a sixth sense that was phenomenal. He would say, no, I wouldn't go there. There's Japs there. And he'd say, how do you know? You're here. That's 5 k's away or 4 k's away. Oh, I can hear them. Things like that.
Well, people, I mean, certainly have spoken to me about, you know, you could smell an American GI in the jungle just by the aftershave or his cigarettes, whatever, You could smell them, sort of, yeah, a kilometre.
I don't know what it was, but they had. But an interesting thing, and that is not so much that came across when I was in Sumatra. In the, one night, about 2 a.m, I woke up, and there was this very strong smell, as if I'm near a circus, or if you go to a circus. You know that animal smell? And I woke up my native guide. And I said, what is that smell? Can you smell it? And I'm honestly say he's a native, but he was as white as a day. He said, Machan, what means it's a tiger. And I said, how do you know? He said, that's the smell of a tiger. I said, is he close? You know, because what could we have done? You know, we only had a revolver. He said, I can't tell you. It's with the wind. He can be 3 kilometers away. He could be on top of us. That didn't make me go to sleep too much afterwards, but that was very interesting. I'll never forget that strong smell. And later on, when he went to the villages and we went through, they said, so-and-so has been killed by a tiger. There is a rogue tiger in the area. And we smelled that. A very strong smell. It's very interesting. Mm. It was just one tiger, but you could smell it just like you're walking into a circus. That was one of the interesting things. But the there is a sixth sense in those countries that they have that cannot be explained. And even psychologists and so have often asked me that question. And they can't explain it. But they know it's true.
What sorts of senses were you having to develop for yourself to work better in these situations?
I don't know if it's sense or experience, but I suppose you could call it sense. Sometimes I would feel that I wouldn't do what I had planned to do, put it that way. Say, for example, it's getting later, at 10 o'clock, it's pretty dark, we could start walking down, see how the movement is, stop here till the movement gets less, and then go in. And I've had times that I say, no, I'm not going to go in yet. There's still, and then you'd find there was all of a sudden a crop of people turning up, and you say, hey, where did they came from? You know, what was on? And you find there is some sort of a gambling thing going on, and then you miss. But that was just sense, you know. Then another time you'd say, oh, I think we can go down now. And you find that it was all quiet and you could do. That way, we had, I suppose, I developed a sort of a instinct or a sense. I look around and I could, sometimes I'd say, well, carry on or no. Even going into a shop for the Chinese, you know, I've had times that I said, I don't trust this Chinaman. I don't know why. You know, I'm not going to make any more contact with him.